The Iowa Arts Showcase is Iowa Public Radio's monthly performing arts program devoted to Iowa's not-for-profit arts and cultural organizations. I'm Jacqueline Hallbloom.
Blackbird singing in the dead of night.
The Super Bowl may be kicking off tomorrow, but Iowa's arts scene is revving up for the entire month. For February, we'll hear about a Lego outbreak at the Figge. We'll investigate what famous musicians have performed in our state. We'll catch up with one of UNI's 2014 Midwest Piano Competition Junior Division winners. We'll congratulate the Iowa State Center as they bring another world-class orchestra to their concert stage. And we'll get the latest scoop on Hancher's final concert of the 2015-16 season, featuring a world-class entertainer, as well as a progress report on their new Performing Arts Center. That's all ahead on Iowa Public Radio's Iowa Arts Showcase. Thanks for joining us. A 10-time Grammy winner is heading to Iowa to close out the 2015-16 Hancher Artist Series. Hancher's executive director, Chuck Swanson, updates us on the progress surrounding the rebuilding of Hancher since the flood of 2008 and their upcoming concert.
The next few weeks are really going to be interesting. We end our years without a home with Bobby McFerrin. This will be Friday, February 12th at the Riverside Casino and Golf Resort. And it's really going to be a show, an amazing show on many, many different levels. First, as I said, this is our last show as a nomadic presenter. And we put a lot of thought into who we wanted for that last performance. And for many reasons, Bobby McFerrin came to the top of the list, and this is turning out to be a very unique and very special performance. First of all, we've turned this into a performance called Bobby Meets Iowa, and there's a real story behind that. Of course, the program, you know, will feature Bobby, but it will be Bobby making improvised and spontaneous music with a variety of local musicians. And I think their connection to Bobby McFerrin is, you know, his piece that everybody knows about, the piece that really made him famous, Don't Worry, Be Happy. And of course, that was many, many years ago. And that really gave, I think, Bobby the ability to just really experiment and do everything that he really wanted to do, because he hit it big early on. And he was at Hancher, I think it was 1997 was the last time. And what I remember more than anything about that is the unique sounds. You know, he brings harmony and rhythm together with his voice, but more than anything, he really inspires people to sing. And I'm not a singer, but he just makes you want to be a part of it, and he really makes you want to experiment yourself. And so what happened is this performance is sponsored by Dick and Mary Jo Stanley, and it's in loving memory of their daughter, Sarah, who died about a year and a half ago. My wife and I, and I know others, attended her funeral up in St. Paul, and the choir sang the 23rd Psalm, and it was Bobby McFerrin's rendition of the 23rd Psalm. And that just kind of began a real thought process about bringing Bobby there again to be the artist to close the Hancher's 8 years without a building. So then that developed into Bobby creating this performance that really has to do with Iowa performers. So the 23rd Psalm will be on the program. Of course, he loves to improvise, so the playbill will have no program in it, but we're going to have the local artists will be on stage. This is the senior choir at Zion Lutheran Church in Iowa City. And I've heard them many times, and they're an amazing group of singers. They're led by Rosalie Moniger. She is the director. And they will be on stage for the entire performance, along with a saxophone player, Damani Phillips. He is assistant professor of jazz studies and African American studies at the University of Iowa. And Richard Wagger, he's a bass player. Richard teaches at Coe College in Cedar Rapids and Cornell College in Mount Vernon. And then Ed East, he will be on percussion. And Ed lives in Waterloo, and he and his partner, Karen Stein, perform as Kale Sur. So it will be an amazing mix of musicians, including, of course, the choir. They will all be on stage the entire time with Bobby. And I know that they all have to be up for adventure because they're not for sure what the program will be either. But I feel that this will be just a great way to end this history of Hancher, presenting in all these various facilities, really incorporating, you know, people from the communities, people from the region, people from the state who have helped us carry on without a home, providing spaces for us, and continuing to come to the Hancher performances. I was just over at the building site, and we still have a lot of work to do over there, but things are looking great. The plan is that the staff will move in this summer, and in the period of the summertime, before we open in September, during that period, we will do some soft openings. We will do some events that will not be open to the public, but events that I say will give us time for some practice swings. We have a lot of operational sorts of things. There's going to be a cafe that is going to be in a beautiful location of the building. The building itself is so beautiful. Cesar Pelli, the architect, when he designed the building, he was so excited about the site. The view is to die for, the view from the building. And our plans to open are September. And I won't be able to say much about some of the opening events, but I will say that I hope people mark their calendars for September 9th or 11th. We're going to have open houses. I want everybody to have an opportunity to see the building. That's actually the Iowa State football weekend. It's a home game for Iowa. We will have, of course, a lot of visitors. And Hancher, because of the statewide outreach that we do as part of the University of Iowa, and this will give them an opportunity to see Hancher. Our season will be announced around April 18th. So September will be full of exciting opportunities for people to come and experience the new building. It is 1,800 seats. The original Hancher was 2,500. And the intimacy of the space for both the artist and for the audience, it's going to be experienced like no other. The architect said when we came up with the 1,800 count, they said that we had hit a sweet spot architecturally, aesthetically, and acoustically. So I'm just, of course, excited to share Hancher with the world. But we have, as I mentioned, a lot of work to be done, both from the building of Hancher, and as I say, the staff is building the operations of the building, and just prepare ourselves for a grand opening in September.
So how do folks get tickets for Bobby McFerrin?
The Hancher box office, which is down at the Old Capitol Mall, they have tickets. And you can go online and purchase tickets.
What's the web address?
It's www.hancher.uiowa.edu. And 1-800-HANCHER is the number. And I would encourage people not to wait too long, because the tickets have gone very, very well. Everybody knows Bobby McFerrin, and then bringing local artists into it, I think it really adds just even more local interest in wanting to be a part of this. And I just think he's the perfect artist to culminate this time in the history of Hancher.
Hancher's executive director, Chuck Swanson. Hancher will be presenting Bobby Meets Iowa with the inimitable Bobby McFerrin on February 12th at 7:30 p.m. at the Riverside Casino and Golf Resort. The McNider Art Museum's film series in Mason City will be held on Saturday afternoons at 2. The 2 Hearst Center for the Arts film series will be held at 7 on Tuesday and Thursday evenings in Cedar Falls. And the Iowa Memorial Union will present the Black Panthers' Vanguard of a Revolution on February 11th at 4 and 7 p.m. The Hearst will also host a chamber concert February 13th at 7 p.m. The University of Iowa will present Sweeney Todd, the Demon Barber of Fleet Street on February 12th through the 14th at the Coralville Center for the Performing Arts. Sanchez and Cohen with the Espinosa Latin Jazz Sextet will perform at 7:30 on February 19th at Grinnell College. And Simpson College Opera presents The Marriage of Figaro on February 26th through the 28th at the Blank Performing Arts Center in Indianola. Just ahead, we'll hear how many world-class musicians presented concerts in Iowa. We'll take a peek through a contestant's eyes at UNI's Midwest International Piano Competition. We'll enjoy learning about an upcoming performance featuring the Polish Baltic Philharmonic Orchestra. And we'll zip to Davenport to see what a Lego master can do with 450,000 bricks. You're listening to Iowa Public Radio's Iowa Arts Showcase. The executive director of Davenport's Figge, Tim Schiffer, welcomes two new exhibits to the museum this month. One is on loan from another museum in Iowa.
Mississippi River Views from the Muscatine Art Center collection started because Muscatine is doing a lot of kind of updating of their systems because they're housed in a historic mansion. So they need to get the collection out of the mansion. You know, they have paintings hung in the parlor, in the library, in the dining room. So it just seemed like a great opportunity to bring the collection over here. So we're bringing about 60 works from their collection over. And they range from, there's one map from the 1600s, and they go all the way up to a painting from 2012, I think. So it's a big range of stuff all about the river.
Who did this map from the 1600s?
I think that map is by Vischer, who was one of the earliest map makers of the New World. And so we have maps up into the 19th century when Iowa was still Indian territory, and it shows all the different tribes and where they are. And there's a map from 1775 that was done by a British map maker that was actually used during the Revolutionary War by the Americans, and it kind of set the western boundary of the United States after the war. So it's really interesting. Then there are drawings from the 1830s from people who went up and down the river and wrote, you know, this guy Seth Eastman in the 1830s did these little pencil drawings along the river, and he wrote on the back what day it was and where he was and what he thought about where he was. So it's a firsthand account of what the river was like, what, 95 years ago? So it's fascinating. And then there's a lot about steamboats or riverboats, you know, and different views of them from the period, and also some contemporary views. And then there's just some little gems, like there's a drawing by Thomas Hart Benton of a riverboat. There's a painting of Dubuque in, I think, 1868 by a guy who is a house painter. He's completely unknown, Simeon Fleisch. But it's just this wonderful view of Dubuque back in the day. And so it's just a great little glimpse at the history of the river.
So what is the artistic value of some of these old maps?
They're beautiful. I mean, some of them are very elaborate with, you know, drawings in the margins. And actually, there's one French map that has the crocodile up by Lake Michigan that's kind of interesting. I think when they didn't know what to put there, then they'd put, like, mythical figures or animals. They're very beautiful, and it's just interesting to think of these guys back in the day who didn't have satellite, they didn't have airplanes. They had to figure out the terrain. Some of them had never even visited the New World, but others, you know, were going up a river on a boat trying to figure out what the layout of the river was. So it gives you an appreciation of that history and what surveyors did and what, you know, the army guys did. Of course, they needed maps to conduct war. So those maps were really valuable at that time.
So when does this show open, and when are these guided tours going to be happening?
Well, the show opens today. We're open late every Thursday with free admission. We're open till 9. So we have programs every Thursday. And the programs that we have for the Muscatine show are, we're doing a program with contemporary writers from the Midwest Writing Center in Davenport. They're going to read some pieces they've written about the river. And before that, at 5:30, Ellis Kell from the River Music Experience next door is going to do a little bit about river music. And then we're actually doing, in May 12th, we're doing a one-minute film fest where people can do a one-minute film, their thoughts about the Mississippi River, and we're going to show it. It's based on a festival they did in Minneapolis called the Mississippi River Minute, and they wouldn't let us use that title. They were fine with us taking the idea, but not the title. So we're going to do that May 12th. And we have a free family day on April 2nd. And those are always great, where we have activities in the galleries and the studios and music and food, all the basics.
Tim Schiffer fills us in on the Figge's Art of Architecture Lego Sculptures exhibit and its creator.
Adam Reed Tucker is an architect. And after 9/11, he kind of took a detour in his architecture career, and he started doing sculptures out of Legos. And he is one of 11 certified Lego masters in the world. He's officially sanctioned by Lego headquarters to come and make these sculptures. So the show that we have is The Art of Architecture. And these are his renditions of architectural masterpieces, all made out of Lego. So the largest one is the Burj Khalifa in Dubai, which is currently the world's tallest building. So his model of it is 17 and a half feet tall, and it includes 450,000 Lego bricks. So there's, you know, the Empire State Building, the John Hancock Building, the St. Louis Arch. There's a couple of buildings that were never built in Chicago, and you'll have to come here on February 18th if you want to know why, because I don't know why. We're pairing that with photographs by Hunt Harris, who's a Quad City photographer, and he's done some photographs of Chicago architecture that are printed on aluminum, and those will be just kind of the backdrop for these sculptures. And then in our galleries, we have a family activity gallery right next to the gallery where the Lego show will be. It's going to be all Legos all the time. We've bought boxes and boxes of boxes of Legos, and we'll have different areas with kind of different Lego activities for people of all ages to try.
So give us a little history on the Lego, and why are people so infatuated with it?
Well, Legos were invented in 1958, and I don't know why people are so infatuated with it, but it certainly is, it's got legs, as they say. You know, I think it appeals to kind of the urge to build, and Adam Reed Tucker only uses the simplest components. He doesn't use all the fancy stuff like are in the kits, but I think he helps design those kits, and he's actually written a book about Lego architecture. So he likes the elemental part of it, which I have to say I kind of like that too, that it's just a very simple building block. But, you know, I know lots of people whose kids want the kits, you know, they're very elaborate, and they just disappear for a few days and do that. So, you know, for us, it's a way to link what we do in terms of exposing people to art with something that people are very familiar with in their home, but they don't necessarily look at it from the art aspect. So for us, it's a way to kind of break down the barrier of the art museum a little bit and make it a little bit more relevant. And maybe while they're here, they may actually accidentally look at the paintings and stuff too. And, you know, the Midwest is a very architecturally rich place. I mean, Chicago is kind of the mecca for American architecture. And actually Davenport, or the Quad Cities, the John Deere headquarters by Arisaran, and is an international landmark. And the Figge's actually a landmark of modern architecture. But, you know, the Jewel Box Bank and Grinnell, and, you know, Frank Lloyd Wright is right down the road. So there is a huge architectural legacy in the Midwest. And it's nice to link up with that too. We also have a new exhibit of Frank Lloyd Wright in our permanent galleries, so we are kind of linking it to that. And we have a model of his Johnson Wax headquarters in Racine that's going to be downstairs during the time that the Lego shows up. So it all goes together one way or another.
The executive director of Davenport's Figge Art Museum, Tim Schiffer. The Figge will host a reception at 5 and a 7 p.m. artist talk with Adam Reed Tucker on February 18th. To get more details on all of the Figge's exhibits and extra events, please see their website at figgeartmuseum.org. For everyone experiencing cabin fever, be sure to check out your local art centers and museums. They all have many family exhibits and activities to help alleviate the winter blues. Don't go away. Iowa State Center throws out the welcome mat for the Polish Baltic Philharmonic Orchestra. An amazing young Midwest International Piano Competition Junior Division winner and From the Top Star gives us a knock your socks off performance. And we'll hear, despite ribbing from outsiders, that Iowa actually does have a great tradition of world-class performances in our state. You're listening to Iowa Public Radio's Iowa Arts Showcase. Last fall, Alice Hoffmeyer, who is a longtime member of the Cedar Rapids Beethoven Club and a true blue volunteer for both the Cedar Rapids Opera Theater and Orchestra Iowa, accepted the Beethoven Club Challenge to investigate the topic of how many famous artists had performed in Iowa. She ended up exploring rosters from Cedar Rapids, Hancher, and C.Y. Stevens. What she discovered was an incredible who's who list of performers. Alice started in CR.
It's really difficult to not name every performer that's been in Iowa that I discovered. But in 1924, Pablo Casals was part of the community concert that was in Cedar Rapids. And in 1937, the Mozart Boys Choir from Vienna was here. 1938, Yehudi Menuhin. 1939, Helen Jepsen. And the Minneapolis Symphony, now it's called the Minnesota Orchestra, of course, but in 1940, Dimitri Mitropoulos and the Minneapolis Symphony were in Cedar Rapids. And I should tell you, Helen Traubel, who was here in Cedar Rapids in 1942, was one of my mom's favorites. So we could go on, Risa Stevens, Marita Farrell, the Cincinnati Symphony, Jarmil Novotna, Carmen Cavallaro and his orchestra, Joseph Fuchs, the Juilliard String Quartet, and the Robert Shaw Chorale. Philippe Entremont, this is with the Cedar Rapids Symphony Orchestra. Joseph Suk, Hendrik Sterzing, Isaac Stern, Gary Carr, Nadia Salerno Sonnenberg. I've heard her several times, as many of you probably have, because she was also at C.Y. Stevens besides being in Cedar Rapids. 1966-67, Janis Starker. Eileen Farrell in 67-68, Eugene Istomin, E. Power Biggs, Leonard Penario, Phyllis Curtin, John Browning, Barry Tuckwell, Leonard Rose, Van Cliburn, Byron Janis, Andre Watts, Ani Kaviana, and Simon Estes, Emmanuel Ax, the Romeros Quartet, Itzhak Perlman, Misha Dichter, Jean-Pierre Rapal, Richard Stoltzman. And then continuing in Cedar Rapids with Orchestra Iowa, with the Pops, Doc Severinsen, Harry Connick Jr., Bernadette Peters was just here, and in the classical area of Hilary Hahn, Austin Hadalek, Orion Weiss, Brian Lewis, Laura St. John, Joshua Roman.
It's really quite amazing. Were you amazed when you started doing this?
I was completely overwhelmed when I started researching these things to think that all of these famous performers would come to Iowa, the beautiful land.
Well, Alice, besides doing Cedar Rapids, did C.Y. Stevens, which has a rich history as well. Tell us about some of the folks who've been at C.Y.
Yeah, C.Y. Stevens opened in 1969, and so the list that I have here begins with Kenny Rogers and the New York Philharmonic, Ferranti and Teicher, Prague String Quartet, Fred Waring and his Pennsylvanians, Itzhak Perlman again, Leontine Price, Andre Watts, John Denver, Neil Diamond, the Royal Winnipeg Ballet, Budapest Symphony, Rudolf Serkin, the Boston Symphony, Boston Pops, Stan Kenton, Canadian Opera, the Vienna Boys Choir, Berlin Concert Choir and Orchestra, London Symphony, Duke Ellington, Roger Williams, George Carlin, the Leningrad Philharmonic. And we were there for that because my husband would charter buses to go to take people to C.Y. Stevens. Marcel Marceau, the Joffrey Ballet, Elizabeth Schwarzkopf, Pinchas Zukerman, Christopher Parkinin, Beverly Sills, Leonard Bernstein, Miroslav Rostropovich, Isaac Stern, Lazar Berman, Frederica von Stade, Eileen Farrell, Julian Bream, Vincent Price, Murray Pariah, Ferranti and Teicher, Peter Nero, Mel Torme, and George Shearing, Marvin Hamlisch, and Simon Estes, of course, Roberta Peters, Benny Goodman, Kathleen Battle, Anne Murray, Chris Tomlin, Laurie Lyne, Kathy Griffin, and Jim Brickman. And I should tell you, we went to the Boston Pops one time out there, and they played the 1812 Overture, and they shot off cannons outside the C.Y. Stevens. And we get back on the bus, and the bus driver said, "I'm so glad you're here. I thought you'd all been killed." So he saw those flashes and everything. It was really something.
Well, not only did she do C.Y. Stevens and Cedar Rapids, but she also went to Iowa City and did some of the famous people that came to Hancher Auditorium. And Alice, tell us about this amazing list.
In Hancher, we have Grace Bunbury in 1960, also Nathaniel Rosen, Frank Avril, Claudia Arrau, Misha Dichter, Beverly Hoke, William Bolcom, Horacio Gutierrez, Lauren Hollander, and Yo-Yo Ma. That was in 1967. Anna Akiko Myers, Van Cliburn, Alicia De La Rocha, Janet Baker, Itzhak Perlman, Emmanuel Axe, Julian Bream, Vladimir Horowitz, Cheryl Mills, Carlos Montoya, Lynn Harrell, Gary Grafman, Christopher Parkinin, Leontine Price, Luciano Pavarotti, Istomen Stern, Rose Trio, Garrick Olson, Simon Estes, Vladimir Ashkenazi, Alexis Fiesenberg, Shirley Verrett, Barry Tuckwell, Richard Stoltzman, Isaac Stern, Beverly Sills, Arthur Rubinstein, Andre Segovia, Peter Zirkin, Joan Sutherland, Pinchas Zukerman again, Andre Watts, Nathan Milstein. This is all Hancher. We're back in the 80s now. 1986, Don Upshaw, Rudolf Serkin, Christopher Costanza, Lazar Berman, Nikolai Geda, Christopher O'Reilly, Rudolf Serkin, Don Upshaw, Eugenia Zukerman, Kathleen Battle, and I remember hearing her perform in 1990, Jean Eflin Bavarozet, Beau Arts Trio, Eric Berchot, Wendy Shen, Frederica von Stade, Joshua Bell, Murray Pariah, James Galway, Sharon Isbin, and I remember hearing her also and seeing her perform. Philippe Entremont, Rene Fleming, I was there for that, 2006, and Leon Fleischer, 2007. And of course, then you know the flood happened in 2008. The new Hancher will open 2016. And what really surprised me the most were how many famous performers have come here, and then the duplication of them singing or performing not only in Stevens but also in Cedar Rapids or also in Hancher. And of course, they could have been in Des Moines too. But my encouragement to the audience listening today is to support the music and arts in your community, because we have, Sioux City, and we have Dubuque, and we have the Quad Cities, Davenport. They all have fine programs, and support your local arts.
Alice Hoffmeyer, current Cedar Rapids Beethoven Club member and volunteer extraordinaire for both the Cedar Rapids Opera Theater and Orchestra Iowa. Alice, when she was doing this, didn't have time to investigate Des Moines or the Gallagher Bluebird. To hear about Alice's interesting background, please go to the drop-down classical menu and click on the Iowa Art Showcase link on our website at iowapublicradio.org. Just ahead, the Iowa State Center prepares for an orchestral celebration, and the UNI Midwest Piano Competition gets ready for their upcoming International June event. You're listening to Iowa Public Radio's Iowa Art Showcase. In June of 2014, the UNI School of Music hosted their first Midwest International Piano Competition. Three judges formed the jury, for which 12 pianists in the junior category and 16 in the senior category from all across the globe performed. The junior category winner, Mayuki Miyashita, returned to UNI and stopped by IPR Studio One, along with one of the festival's movers and shakers, artistic co-director Dr. Dmitry Vorobiev. Dmitry shares everyone's response to Mayuki.
Mayuki really shocked all of us, the jury members and us as artistic directors, and I think I have to say all the audience members as well. She came, you know, this little girl goes on stage and plays with such level of maturity, such presence and playfulness. And it was just really so convincing and on such high level of performing that we were all really taken away by her. And interestingly, we had competitors during that competition in junior level and in the senior level who were, you know, maybe not so great in the first round, a little better in the second round, or vice versa, etc. And Mayuki was one of those who actually was just as good in the first and in the second round. So great, so mature, so solid. So.
And what about some of the musical selections she selected?
Well, I remember particularly the Italian concerto that she played by Bach was really commented on by jury members that it was so well played, so simple, yet perfectly in the style and extremely convincing. And of course, selections by Uehara, the Japanese composers from Tom and Jerry show, and those were, I don't think anybody has heard those before, and they really went so well with the audience, with the jury members. I'm so glad that we have a recording of Mayuki now performing one of those compositions.
We know you're already planning for UNI's 2016 Midwest International Piano Competition. When are the dates so folks can get them in their calendars? And tell us a little bit about first and second rounds and how folks can get tickets and all of that.
Well, the dates for the competition will be June 5 through June 11. And the performances actually do start on June 6th. Everything will take place in the Great Hall of the Gallagher Blue Dorn Performing Arts Center. And we will have the exact schedule posted on the website probably in May. And what's very, very important for all the listeners to know is that only the Saturday night event, which is a closing ceremony and the final round for the senior category with the Waterloo Cedar Falls Symphony Orchestra, that is the only event for which people actually have to buy tickets. Everything else is completely free. You can come in and listen to as much of great music as you want. We kind of came up with this slogan, so to speak, life is too short to listen to bad piano music. You have a great chance here in the state of Iowa to come and listen to some great level of piano playing. Mayuki is just one example of that level. And all of it is free. And just every single day, you know, you come in the morning, in the afternoon, or in the evening, whenever you can, but there will be some music happening in the Great Hall.
UNI's Midwest International Piano Competition's artistic co-director, Dr. Dmitry Vorobiev. Mayuki Miyashita returned last fall to UNI for a special concert. In addition to playing the piano, she also plays violin. She talks about when she started playing both of these instruments.
I started playing the piano when I was 6. I started in the Yamaha music. And for the violin, I started playing when I started a school in US because my school had a violin, like orchestra class. And so that's why I started violin.
When you first started the piano, did you know immediately that piano was the instrument you wanted to play?
I don't remember well, but before I started playing the piano, I was in the music class. And in the music class, we sang, we like played keyboard, and we did like some dance or some music stuff. And then my mom thought that I really liked playing the keyboard. So that's why she let me start playing the piano.
How did you move from Japan to the United States? Tell us a little bit about where you grew up and who you studied with there, and then when you came to the U.S.
In Japan, I grew up in Hamamatsu City in Shizuoka, and I studied with a Yamaha music teacher. And when I was in sixth grade, my dad's job for Yamaha, they moved us to U.S. in Tennessee. And then since I moved to Tennessee, I studied with Dr. David Nollington at the University of Tennessee.
So do you have brothers and sisters who also play instruments?
I have a brother, younger brother, but he doesn't play any instrument.
So tell us who some of your favorite artists are.
Well, my favorite composer is Beethoven. I used to like many composers. Like whenever I play some composer's piece, I just love that composer. I loved every composer that I played, but right now I think I have more passion for Beethoven than any other composers.
So who are some of the people that have influenced you?
Whenever I listen to Beethoven's performance, pieces by Beethoven, I like to listen to Marais Perrier's. His performances inspire me a lot.
I love his performances too. Mm. So how did you find out about the composer Uehara, and why did you decide to include some of those pieces on your competition?
Well, when I was in Japan, Hiromi Uehara, she used to be on the TV and stuff, so I kind of found out about her. And then I saw her music in the music shopping. And so I brought it and told my teacher that I wanted to play her pieces. And when I came to U.S., I told my teacher in U.S. that I wanted to play the Tom and Jerry show by Hiromi Uehara. And he really loved it. So he wanted me to play this piece in many competitions and many concerts. And I think it was a great piece for me.
Well, she's quite an amazing woman. Is she sort of your role model, who you want to look like and perform like when you grow up?
Well, she's a jazz pianist, and I don't think I'm going to be a jazz pianist, but as a musician, I think she inspires me a lot. And yes, she's like my role model.
Now, you have performed with the Knoxville Symphony Youth Orchestra, the Mozart 12 Piano Concerto. You performed the first Beethoven Piano Concerto with the Maryville College Orchestra. Mm-hmm. And recently, in 2013, you won a competition in New York. And then in 2014, in addition to the UNI Midwest International Piano Competition, you also had third prize with the Chopin International Piano Competition. So that's a lot of competitions. You must be practicing nonstop.
No, actually, to be honest, I don't like practicing. I love performing for people, but practicing is not fun. But whenever I start practice, it gets fun as I practice. So I guess I practice before the competition. But usually I don't think I practice as much.
You are a busy young woman. So what do you do in your free time when you're not at the piano keyboard? What else do you like to do?
I like reading. I like drawing. But pretty much when I'm free, I'm just doing nothing. Maybe sleeping or talking with my mom. Or I use some social network. So sometimes I like to watch some people, like other people's pictures, or post some pictures.
Now, you were just 14 when you came to Iowa in June of 2014 for this Midwest International Piano Competition. Mm-hmm. And what was that like for you when you came here?
Oh, this competition was one of the best competitions I've ever experienced. my first impression was the people. People in City Falls are so nice, and I think people here are one of the nicest people in the world. And they just try their best making this competition a success. And because of them, I was so relaxed and comfortable. And when I performed, I could do my best.
Well, you had just mentioned that you were on From the Top. What was that experience like for you?
Oh, it was great. When I performed in front of a big audience, I think it was like the biggest audience I've ever had. And I just had so much fun.
And what did you play for?
I played the Tom and Jerry Show, the piece I'm going to play today.
Well, let's talk about this work. Tell us a little bit about this piece. And I went out on YouTube, and you're out there when you were just 12 playing this piece, and it has almost 113,000 hits. That's pretty impressive.
Thank you.
So tell us about this piece and what really drew you to it.
Well, the composer Hiromi Uehara, I think she did a very good job on composing this piece, because when I play this piece, I can just see a picture of Tom and Jerry chasing each other or playing with each other, and I can just imagine them doing many things when I play this piece.
And it sort of has two different sections. It has a smoother, more contemplative section, and then a really jazzy, upbeat, fun section.
Well, on the first section, they're just playing together or fighting each other, but then they just feel sorry for each other. So in the middle section, they're like, I'm sorry for, like, chasing you, or they're, like, trying to be friends. But then they start chasing each other again.
Well, we'd love to hear you perform Where is the Tom and Jerry Show Now? So would you perform it for us, please?
Yes, sure.
Thank you.
The junior category winner of the 2014 Midwest International Piano Competition, Mayuki Miyashita. She performed Moira's Tom and Jerry Show for us in IPR Studio One. For more details about this year's Midwest International Piano Competition, please see their website at midwestpianocompetition.com. Just ahead, the Iowa State Center rolls out the red carpet for the Polish Baltic Philharmonic Orchestra. You're listening to Iowa Public Radio's Iowa Arts Showcase.
We're really proud that Iowa and Ames, Iowa is on the roster and in the mix of the 19 states and 45 concerts. So it's very, very special that we can host them at our own Stevens Auditorium.
The Iowa State Center's outreach coordinator, Sarah Compton. She was also joined by the center's development and sponsorship manager, Patty Cotter. They discussed the long history behind Iowa State Center's tradition of bringing internationally famous orchestras to perform in Ames and shared a few details about this year's visiting 80-piece symphony. Patty Cotter.
Beginning in 1969, we hosted to open Stevens Auditorium the New York Philharmonic for five glorious nights. So it really has been a storied history with many of the major international orchestras visiting Stevens Auditorium and Little Old Ames. So this is a wonderful continuation of that tradition, and we're very excited to have the second of our 2016-17 orchestral offerings being the Polish Baltic Philharmonic. And the group that helps us to present orchestras is called IOFA for short, and the long name is the Ames International Festival Orchestra Association. And that group has been here from the inception, and this is a dedicated group of people who support performing arts, specifically the orchestras visiting in Ames, both through advocacy and through donating to make sure these concerts continue that storied tradition.
Yeah, in the old days, that's part of IOFA's storied history is the orchestras used to sit down for a week here and play softball and ride bikes and tour farms, and it was quite a grand and glorious get-to-know-you time. And just the economics keep them on the road a lot longer now, with more frequent stops and less time in each stop. So that doesn't happen so much anymore in today's economics, but maybe it will again someday. We just don't know.
Well, tell us about this concert, when it is, and the program, which is fantastic.
Concert will be Tuesday, March 1st. At 7:30 p.m., and it is an all Beethoven program. They'll begin with the Egmont Overture, and guest piano soloist Marcin Kozjak will play the Piano Concerto No. 5, or the Emperor Concerto, and then they will close with the iconic, because everybody knows Beethoven's Fifth Symphony.
Tell us just a little bit, Sarah, about each work, the Egmont.
It really mirrors the Polish history in that sense. Yeah, Beethoven did write that. He was a big fan of Goethe, at least until they met each other. I'm not sure their actual meeting, they liked each other as well in person as they did respect each other's work. Beethoven kind of stayed behind, and it was a very lonely time for him, and the Egmont was really written as a celebration of freedom and a... It was all about liberty and the celebration of liberty in the end. So even with the execution of Egmont at the end, it was a victory in the eyes of liberty. And the Polish Baltic Philharmonic Orchestra is based in Gdansk, which is really the home base of the Polish movement and the anti-communism sentiment from the latter half of this last century.
Tell us about this Piano Concerto No. 5 in E-flat of Beethoven. It has this nickname, the Emperor, but rumor has it that Beethoven really didn't even give that to the concerto himself.
Well, he started out being a fan of Napoleon, but not so much after time passed. I will talk a little bit about the pianist that's coming. Marcin Kozjak was fairly much a child prodigy. He won his first competition in Poland as a 10-year-old. Wouldn't we all like to be able to do that? And he made his debut with the Krakow Philharmonic at age 11. So he's had quite a storied young life. He is still very young. He's just 26 or 27. I'm not exactly sure what day his birthday is on, but he's very much in that young age. And he's already placed very highly in the Chopin competition, at Hastings International Competition in the UK, the Rubinstein Piano Festivals. He has recorded several or a couple different Chopin CDs, and he's just a remarkable, remarkable young musician.
Well, so neat to have him with the Polish Baltic Philharmonic Orchestra. And then they're going to finish the concert with, I think, an audience favorite of everyone.
Yeah, it's one of those where I can name that tune in four notes, and three of them are the same. So yes, they will finish off with Beethoven's Fifth Symphony. And everybody knows the opening, but it's one of those things where it's real important also for a listener to take time to listen to the whole piece, because it really develops into something that's quite magnificent. And to listen to the way Beethoven plays with those four notes and turns them upside down and inside out and stretches them out and passes them around the orchestra, that to me is a lot of what classical music is all about, is being able to listen to something over and over again and hear something new each and every time it's performed. And if the only time you've ever listened to Beethoven's Fifth is while you're washing the dishes or reading the paper, then it's really a wonderful thing to take it in live and really dedicate your listening to something that's that much a piece of our humanity.
And I know for me, the idea of hearing it live in Stevens and coming early to the concert to hear a preview where a person who knows a lot about music will discuss what you're about to hear, seeing the interaction of the conductor, Ernst von Thiel, with the musicians. I think even someone for whom this would be a new activity in their life would really, really enjoy it. So I will just point out, we do have a preview at 7 p.m. in the building in an area called the Cafe for people to learn a little bit more about Beethoven. And we also have a dinner at our nearby building for people who want a little more extended presentation before. And we're excited to have Jonathan Stern, the concertmaster from Des Moines Symphony and an ISU professor, to get people like me a little bit more knowledgeable about what they're going to hear that night.
And it's very tried and true. Music has endured for 150 years for a reason. And that reason is it's great music. And I think just how special it is to hear live music and to not take it for granted. We live in such a wonderful age where recorded music, as on Iowa Public Radio, sounds so good. You know, I mean, what you guys spin in the, during the day is fabulous. You put it on your wonderful speakers and it's almost like being in the concert hall. But it's not being in the concert hall. There's an energy there that only comes to you when you're in a group of like-minded people with musicians playing expressly for you. It's just that one time, you know, it's exactly what you get. There's no retake, there's no, oh, let's fix that, or gee, wasn't that wonderful, I hope we can do it again. It's just, it's all in the moment.
And I would add to what Sarah had said that, you know, it's a lovely hall in which to listen to music with great acoustics, and it's a large hall. So I would encourage people, even if they're making their decision at the last minute, we'll have a great seat for you at Stevens.
So how can folks get more information about the dinners and this pre-concert talk and to get tickets?
Everything is available on our website, which is center.iastate.edu. And we will have information from the program on our website as well, or call 294-3347.
Iowa State Center's development and sponsorship manager, Patty Cotter, along with outreach coordinator, Sarah Compton. Today's February Iowa Arts Showcase broadcast is a production of Iowa Public Radio. Program thanks for this show goes to Chuck Swanson, Tim Schiffer, Alice Hoffmeyer, Dmitry Vorobiev, Mayuki Miyashita, Patty Cotter, and Sarah Compton. Production thanks goes to Iowa Public Radio's Tony Daner, Catherine Perkins, Phil Moss, and Sean McLean. Operations thanks for this show also goes to IPR's Jason Burns and music director Al Scherz. Program research was provided by Rachel Berenger. I'm Jacqueline Hallblum. Thanks for joining us. For more information on Iowa Public Radio's programming schedule and Iowa Public Radio's Iowa Arts Showcase, please visit our website at iowapublicradio.org.